Jack, yes, it's time to go. Never really thought about that. It is the Nancy Skinner Show, and I am Nancy Skinner. But we can keep we can keep the trouble going a little bit longer, can't we, Cree? Send me in the outer space at my fingers. I'll be June with guns and gold, but that ain't gonna help me now. I think you're right, but you were wrong. You try to take me. She's not pink, but she is Nancy Skinner, and she is trouble. This song was made for me. I got to catch up with that lady pink next time around. All right, it is the Nancy Skinner Show, and some of you may have seen an email that we just sent out from the program. Team Skinner, we've had our own sort of stress test going on the last, 3 months on this program, if you will. Hey, why don't you fill in and then all of a sudden take a network show, pick up the pieces, everybody goes away, keep it running, try and put together the financial partners, which we did, re-engineer it out of Detroit, technical and challenges and all, we did, book some fabulous guests, really get people caught up to speed on what's going on with the economic crisis, the auto industry, the really important global economic meltdown issues of the day. That's what people care about. We did build a new studio from scratch with all the bells and whistles. We did. We managed to step up to the plate with all these challenges. Build a fabulous website from scratch, NancySkinnerLive.com. We did. And then, you know, developments happen. So in the stress test, the analogy there, that developments happen. Right? You know what I mean by that, right? I think Dick Cheney said that to me. And as it turns out, Randy Rhoads is going to be coming back, syndicated by Premier, owned by Clear Channel, which is our largest affiliates. So Team Skinner put their heads together, and we had been working prior to this on a multimedia plan, given that I do so much in TV, and I've been wanting to write a book, and I've been asked to write a book for a very long time and could never really find the time. I worked on President Obama's campaign and my own campaigns and been on radio and TV so much. So we've decided that we are going to regroup here at Team Skinner, Team Trouble, and take a hiatus from the radio program for a while, while we develop these other aspects of our plan, the multimedia plan, which is TV and this book that I have been promising that I would get to work on, and then come back and be on the air in the fall. And so that is the plan. We just pulled the trigger on that and sent out an email to all of our friends who've signed up at the website to let you know that. So if you're just, many of you knew from the affiliates that we knew that we're going to, Clear Channel affiliates that are going with their premier programming, that was the case. But we decided that that's what we're going to do and let everyone know that that's probably the best move for all of us, really. For me personally, for my team, as we regroup and get our show going and get these other aspects of our plan off and running. So it's tough. It's always a sad. It's always sad to sort of. It's a hiatus. That's what I'm. It really is just a hiatus. For the time being, but I'm getting some great emails as I continue to do. And let's see, so from B. Anderson in Ann Arbor, she said, "What a shame! Even a hiatus of a voice of informed reason is a loss. Look forward to your resurfacing, B." Hey, B, I can assure you this much: I will resurface. You know what? Hey, you know what, Krieg? You got to get another song from Pink that I don't think you've played. Get that ready for me. It's called 18 Wheeler. Because I do. I mean, if you look at my life, I lost to the president, and I know some people are sick of hearing that, but that was a tough one. I mean, but he went on to be president, and he's great, and he's fabulous, and I had that experience, and I ran for Congress and lost by 3 points in a race that had been a 20-point margin, running on retooling the auto industry to be more efficient, having, Bobby Kennedy Jr. do my first ad on global warming in the home of the auto industry. That's pretty cool to lose by 3 points. Painful, but cool. MSNBC offered me a television show when I was a regular fill-in host at one point with Howie Carr in Boston. He was a Boston host. And they sat me down. I had been filling in for Bill Press on Buchanan and Press and Ron Kuby on Curtis and Kuby for a long time. Said, yep, we want you to do this. This is great. And it's not an audition. We think you're great, and we want to do the show with you and Howie Carr, and just give us your agent. And I did, and there was no demands or anything, and then all of a sudden there was a management change, and they put Phil Donahue on here, and that rug got pulled underneath me. A morning gig in Detroit that Stacey Taylor from San Diego and I were teamed up and auditioned for a week. They said, great, we love it. You'll have a contract by Monday. Well, that got pulled out. So I've had a lot of rugs pulled out from underneath me, and it hasn't seemed to trip me up yet. So I doubt that it will, because in my next song, I always find I regroup a little bit and find other avenues where I will continue to do my work. So listen, it's really important to go to my website, nancyskinnerlive.com, and sign up, because I am going to continue blogging. That's one of the things I've never had enough time to do with TV and radio. Oh, my phone's ringing. I'll have to call you back. I'm on here. And I'm going to be blogging. I'm going to be doing that and really working our website. The website is going to continue with all the bells and whistles, and there'll be video. I'm not going anywhere. I just won't be on the radio for a little bit, for a little hiatus. And then you better believe this girl. She's not a quitter. My dad's a football coach. I've not gone through all of this, these ups and downs in my life to give up. But I know a lot of people... a lot of people want me to give up, which is more reason for me to say, I'll be back. But way, way, way more have been very wonderful to me, and I feel like I've gotten to know so many people in the markets we're in and touched a lot of lives throughout the country, and that's worth it right there. That is worth everything I've done, whether it worked out or not. That was worth it that we were able to be together. Mike is in Vancouver, Washington. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to call and say goodbye for now, the operative being for now, and wish you well. I also called the local morning program on KPOJ this morning, and you can go and listen to it on podcast, and I called out Mike Dirks for his ill-advised decision to remove your program. I think it was a very unfortunate decision.
Well, it wasn't his. Mike actually wanted to carry the show on the weekend if he could, but it's not enough. It wasn't his, so I give him a pass.
Well, a weekend gig doesn't cut it, Nancy.
Right,
you should be on during the week, and you need to be on live. It was bad enough. It was enough of a compromise that you're on here on a 3-hour delay. You're not even on in Portland right now. It's not going to be on for another 3 hours. And talk radio needs to be done live, and I'm just surprised that they've allowed this, that situation to go on with a lot of their programming here. And
you about the live thing, because my show in particular it's a conversation, and I engage everybody in that conversation, and so for me that was a big factor in this decision. I want to talk to people live. That's where I think we get our energy. And it's not me just preaching on and on and on. You know, that's just not some host, Rush, will do that, and he'll take a couple calls.
I couldn't agree more. That's actually, sorry to interrupt, but that's what's made your show so special. It's not just you. It's the Randys from L.A. I think there was a gentleman I listened to on Tuesday who called in, the conservative. It's the Ricks from Albuquerque who wrote to you that letter that you have on your blog from a couple weeks ago. That's what really, to me, is what makes this program so important. And what you do, I don't listen to any conservative talk radio. It's not because I hate conservatives. If I knew of a conservative that was in Portland that does what you do, I would probably listen to that program at least part of the time, because it's important. Because Rick gets it, and, you know, Rick from Albuquerque, mm-hmm. Randy who called the show the other day, and hopefully he's listening. If we do not learn how to talk to each other, if liberals can only talk to liberals, and conservatives can only talk to conservatives, and we're going to just self-segregate, we're basically over as a country, and people need to wake up to that. Mm-hmm. You know, I get the whole partisan frustration. I'm very frustrated that, you know, we supposedly have power in Washington right now, and yet we still seem to give away a lot of ground to conservatives. The single payer advocates getting thrown out of the meeting the other day, couldn't even be given one seat at the table, which is ridiculous. But that's neither here nor there with having the ability to talk to each other and talk in a measured reasoned demeanor.
Mike, you've said it better than I could have, so thank you.
and if there's one more thing I could add, though, Nancy, is that you've become the latest poster child for the problem of ownership of media in this country. That, too, needs to be said, and that's something else that I think needs a lot of attention and discussion, because to me that's really what this is about. If we had a greater diversity of ownership, it might not be such an issue that you were coming off the air here. There'd be another channel here in the Portland market, and you could be picked right up, and also in LA and elsewhere. And that's where I'm going to start looking into myself. It's time to look at addressing that issue personally.
Amen, brother. Media consolidation. Voices stifled. Hey, Mike, thank you so much. I got
to
run.
That was
wonderful. Thank you. I really appreciate everything you've said and done.
Good luck to you and
okay.
your team. Take
you
care.
Bet. I'll be back. I'll be back, Mike. Okay.
I look forward to it.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Great. When we come back, a few more calls, and then I want to give you my rundown. Got a really huge show and a lot going on today that's so freaky. Just on my last day, you wouldn't believe what I'm doing and who's on the show and how it all comes together in the most bizarre of ways. Or it's me, so you probably would believe that as we wrap up the Nancy Skinner Show. So there you go. Yeah, the other Pink song, my friends, that we've never played here yet, and how ironic that we found it today. You can run me over with an 18-wheeler, throw me out the window. You can't keep me down. My second Pink theme song, I suppose, when I return from my hiatus. We'll change Trouble. We'll vote on that, whether we should stick with Trouble or go with You Can't Keep Me Down on the Nancy Skinner Show. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. We've decided, if you're just tuning in, that we are going to go into hiatus on the program and work on the TV stuff. But before I get into that, because it's pretty weird, you got to sign up at the website, nancyskinnerlive.com, and be informed. But it's pretty weird how everything kind of came together on this day and we arrived at this moment, given all of we've been through over the last 3 months. We didn't even get our studio. Our brand new studio is all ready to go when I start, and maybe that's a good omen. It was ready. It would have been ready Monday. But that's the way the ball bounces in life, and you know, the old sailing. All the cliches apply, doors closing and opening and all that stuff. But it's so funny because I've tried on this show, what I've tried to do, I've always tried to do it, but really with a lot of help I had this time, tried to do exactly what we just talked about with my last caller there, that you really have this conversation, like honestly invite the other side on, challenge them as best I can, but do it respectfully, because otherwise it's just a screaming match, and see if we couldn't mix it up so it's not all a bunch of conservatives listening to conservatives or liberals listening to liberals, that we really have a discussion. And I have enough to write about with this book based on this experience of trying to do that. Trust me, your emails will be in my book. You've opened my eyes. It was very hard for me to express my opinion about, for instance, that I thought that the investigations into torture, although they should happen, don't need to be tomorrow's priority because of these really big things. That I got more flack from that than anything else I've said on the show. And I knew that it would be hard for me to come out and really say, this is what I believe, because of the feelings that had grown up over after 8 years of Bush. Ironically enough, folks, I will be on, okay, Bill O'Reilly tonight. He's defending torture. I'm saying, no, never. Exactly the you know, I will be fighting Bill O'Reilly on the torture issue, okay? How weird is that? And CNBC, at the same time, defending the autos. Yes, by a miracle of broadcast techniques, at 8 p.m., I'll be on both a right network and a left network talking about two of my favorite subjects. And Ed Nixon will join me later in the program, Richard Nixon's brother. And I'll ask him about Frost Nixon. So this is all happening on this very last day of this latest incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show. And here we go. Let's keep moving along. I'm the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64-NANCY or 1-888-OOH-NANCY. Well, I might get some of those OOH Nancys going in here because I'm going to talk to my dear friend, conservative syndicated columnist Joel Mowbray, who joins me to talk about some of the political happenings on this Friday. Hi, Joel.
Hey, Nancy. How are you?
I'm very well. It's one of those crazy busy days, but that's kind of how it is for everyone, huh?
It's one of those weeks, I think.
Better than dead. I guess. You always got to keep things in perspective, Joel, right?
Yes, that's what I always think of, better than dead.
In fact, each time
I wake up in the morning, I say, wow, at least I'm not dead.
I say the same thing. That is so freaky deaky. All right, so listen, Joel, let's just jump right in here. Before I get into some specifics, I want to talk about the bank stuff. There's, you know, today the Wall Street Journal and others are reporting that, hey, the banks are like, you know what, Obama, maybe you were right. It's a great story in there how the banks objected vehemently to the stress test, and they were all panicked about it, and this is the worst possible thing. And then all of a sudden today, Geithner said, listen, this is going to create, it's going to clear the fog of uncertainty. And what do you know? Lo and behold, these penny stocks are now back on the rebound. Yes, they're going to need something like $75 billion in cash, but they think they're going to make it through the meltdown. Did Tim Geithner, the much despised Tim Geithner under Obama's direction, did those guys know what they were actually doing?
Yeah, it's not quite clear yet they actually knew what they were doing. You know, I mean, maybe on the stress test, but on the broader thing, we've gone through a lot more pain and turmoil than we had to. I think Geithner, especially in the beginning, when he didn't know how to manage expectations, saying he'd have a plan and then not having a plan. When you get to the point where you're just a Treasury Secretary and Saturday Night Live is doing, frankly, a brilliant sketch lampooning you for a complete lack of ideas, that's a problem. And it's a problem in a very serious sense.
A problem Sarah Palin knows well, but okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. But I mean, look, the thing is, it's a surprise because Geithner is a guy who's been around. Geithner's a guy who had respect both sides of the aisle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this was actually a shock, I think, to a lot of people that he would come out bumbling the way he did in the beginning. Well, does this mean he's going to be a bad Treasury Secretary in the next couple of years? I don't know. I mean, maybe he'll rebound nicely. Maybe it's just he had a bad first few months.
Well, you know what, though? I got to come back at that, though. The New York Times did a great sort of historical perspective on what happened. And he said, look, this whole bank situation is unprecedented. We've never seen this. The level of complexity now and the chance of a systemic collapse are so... He said, so what I'm going to do first is I'm going to sit down and have just create a framework for tackling it. So his first announcement that President Obama previewed was the framework. And everybody jumped on that and said, there are not enough details. Because it was a framework. Then they went back, sat down, and said, look, there are no good options. But we think, given all of the options on the table, we've gone over and over, and this is the best option. Then they came out with the details. Banks didn't like that. They didn't like the stress test. They didn't like this whole thing. But now it seems as if he was
Nancy,
right.
Even though it's Friday afternoon, you're acting as if it's Monday morning, and it's time to do Monday morning quarterbacking. It's great that you say now that all he was doing a framework. It would have been nice before he unveiled the framework had he said, I don't have all the details. I'm going to give a framework, and then we're going to kind of figure out from there. What he did do...
I think he did. He did say something like that.
Nancy, go back and look at the words Obama used. Obama was very clear that there was going to be a plan the next day from Geithner. There was no plan. There was the intent to form a plan. There were some foundational principles, but that's not a plan.
I will go back and check that. Let's move on, because I will go back and check that. I do think that they sort of laid it out, but I will check the record.
Market nosedived afterwards.
And we will see. And now look where it is. Okay, so it's finally rebounding. But all right, so here's another. Moving on to the whole issue of President Obama yesterday came out and outlined deficit reduction. You know, hey, we're going to have to cut some spending. We're going to have to close some loopholes. The idea of these tax havens. That where people are just literally evading taxes by putting their money out there because we got to bring this deficit down. And then those of you on the right are screaming bloody murder. Don't, no, this is, you know, the confiscation or whatever. You can't have it both ways. You can't be teabagging on one hand because the deficit's out of control. And when we actually try to close those loopholes down and that evasion of the responsibility, you're mad about that. You're sticking up for those guys. Which is it? Teabaggers,
Nancy,
who are you with, Joel? Teabaggers or tax evaders? Choose.
Nancy, you know, when our mutual friend, I'm sure, over at MSNBC, decided to start the sexual puns of teabagging, and then Anderson Cooper started doing it. You know, I didn't even know, honestly, that it was a sexual pun until afterwards.
Nor did I.
I think, right.
It was a very unfortunate sexual pun, however.
Right. I think you are above that. I know
cheap protest. I really wasn't intending to integrate. I wasn't going to slip that one in, if you will. But...
Nancy.
You
can make fun of them for wearing colonial outfits. You can make fun of them for a lot of things.
Hey, listen, okay? I defended some of them because Janine Garofalo said they were all of them were racist. And I said, you know what? I can't go that far. Yes, there were racists in the crowd, but I cannot go as far to say.
I don't know there were racists in the crowd. I mean, the parties I saw, I didn't see any racists. I saw some people were ticked off.
No, this was a, yeah, there were racists in the group, but I would never go so far as to say
all of them were.
I
can't tell you how many times I've been in liberal circles.
But here's my bigger point is this. They're protesting out of control spending and deficits. So when President Obama tries with the tax havens, Joel, and also when he tried to talk about cutting, say, the F-22 Raptor. Okay, now this is an aircraft. It's almost $500 million per aircraft. That is definitely a special interest project. It's designed to fight, have air superiority with the Soviet Union. Like, that's our biggest worry. And it's because it's produced by Boeing and Lockheed Martin and Dallas and a couple other places, and they have powerful people on powerful committees. Now, that is a waste of our money. You can't have it both ways.
Right.
You can't say the deficit's too high, but not want to take out, close loopholes down and take out wasteful spending. Earmarks.
Okay, look at the wasteful spending. I generally agree. I think, for example, when it comes to the defense spending, I think we need to have, if we really want to do it right, we should have an independent commission the way we already do with the base closures, the BRAC, the Base Recommendation Closure Committee.
Mm-hmm.
What they did is they said, up or down, you have to vote on this entire package of recommendations. You still get to vote, but there's no nitpicking about one base versus the other. This is a way to get around that that concern.
As it relates to what?
Every base that gets closed. Right.
Defense spending?
Defense budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think with defense spending, what we should do is have something when it comes to which fighter jets we're going to have. Missile defense spending, I'm bothered by cutting our missile defense spending 25%. That's the one thing in defense spending that really does concern me because, North Korea, they are not alone in the world in developing missiles. I think that it is a mistake to think that we're safe from missiles. You have Iran, you have North Korea, you have other, Pakistan even, right now they're an ally, but what if they fall? I mean, we have to be much more, I think, concerned about the threat of missiles hitting not just the United States soil in the contiguous 48, but hitting U.S. targets, hitting whether it be Alaska. I know you on the people on the left might want to get rid of Alaska because it gave us Sarah Palin. But I can't.
No, I want to keep her there.
But we have U.S. targets all around the world.
Okay, but here, all right, sorry. So let's take that on missile defense spending.
Okay.
The problem with missile.
Wait, no.
I want to address missile defense spending here because the issue there is you said we and I agree with you that there is a threat of missiles, but here's a problem. But missile defense experts all say, look, there is no foolproof system that you can have dummy warheads coming in that will evade the system. So the point is, and we have this opportunity that some experts are saying to cut a deal with Russia, finally, who's been helping Iran sort of, they've been aiding and abetting Iran, if you will, on the side. But if we cut a deal and say we are not going to continue to build a missile defense system in their backyard and they help us to clamp down on Iran, then we help solve the proliferation. We help solve a lot of that problems, and we can move toward that grand vision where we don't need it.
Nancy,
and it's not possible anyway.
If we were in a world where we faced one threat or two threats, then I would agree. Like, back in the Cold War when we had Soviet Union and maybe Cuba or Soviet Union, maybe one other place, great. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. Let's say we take care of Iran. That would be wonderful. If Iran were the only threat, I would agree. Let's do it. But it's not the only threat.
I know, but it's a twofold problem. No one has said, all the experts say there is no foolproof missile defense system. You can put dummy warheads coming in, and we don't know what's real, what has nuclear, what's a dummy.
Let me address that.
I didn't know you were a nuclear weapons expert, Joel. You continue to amaze me, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, my dad actually is a nuclear power engineer who worked in power plants across the United States.
Oh, okay. Well, I stayed in the Holiday Inn Express last night, so let's go, let's have at it.
Okay. In fact, my dad worked at the nuclear power plant in Buchanan, Michigan for a long time.
Really?
Yeah. So, what the issue is with missile defense technology is that it keeps getting better by leaps and bounds, shockingly so over the past 15, 20 years. I mean, if you go back to when we first really started getting into missile defense 20 years ago, it was laughable. It was laughable where our technology was. Today, it's generations, and I mean like 7, 8 generations better. Now, is it foolproof? Absolutely not. But given the rate of innovation, an improvement in the technology, I think that it's only a matter of time before we get to where we need to be. Maybe another 5, 6 years, maybe 10 years. But just because we're not where we need to be today doesn't mean we stop. We had John F. Kennedy, could we agree then?
I agree with you, actually. You're actually persuading me. You're actually persuading me that it's worthy of research to continue to do this.
Yeah.
But deploying it prematurely has caused the animosity that's sort of emboldened our enemies. So how about if we agree on research continues, deployment doesn't until it's ready?
Well, but hang on. We have deployment of technology that actually does stop missiles right now.
No, they're all duds. They were rigged. All of our experiments right now were rigged. Hey, listen, I'm up against my break right here, so why don't we – I want to move along. I also want to – I know that you want to talk about Biden, Joe Biden, his first 100 days. I want to talk about President Obama's first 100 days. So when you – Joel Mulberry joins us back, we'll cover that, and I'll give you your last words on that. I don't want to cut you short, Joel. Okay.
Okay.
As we continue, 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program, or 1-888-OOH-NANCY, whichever is your preference on this Friday. And here we go on the Nancy Skinner Show. I am Nancy Skinner. Ironically, 1-888-64-NANCY, the number of the program. We're continuing our discussion with Joel Mulberry. He is a syndicated columnist. Joel, do you have a website or something? Do you blog as well?
I do not blog, but you can find me at foxnews.com.
At foxnews.com. Okay, great. Where I will be on Bill O'Reilly this evening.
Yes, wow. Are you going to step into the firing line with him, or are you guesting?
I'm in the firing line. He's a pussycat. He's easy. I can give him the two punch. He's done. Anyways, he's not as formidable.
Did you make a sexual reference to Bill O'Reilly? Did I miss something there?
No, what is with you in this? I'm not even, that's not where my brain is today. That's actually, would not be at the top of my mind. All right, let's talk politics, shall we, Joel?
Shall we?
Okay, let's go on. The first 100 days, big hoopla and a lot of analysis about this. I don't think, you weren't on last week, so we didn't have a chance to talk about it. By and large, it's funny, the American public gave this president the best numbers of any modern-day president, even though he had a global economic meltdown, auto industry, banking crisis, two wars, you name it. Pirates took the pirate, boom, 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 took them out, and swine flu. And he got the highest numbers in history. How do you come back at that? I mean, other than a standing ovation, Mr. President.
Well, I refer you back to I think it was like January 1992 or December 1991 when Saturday Night Live, and this is the second SNL reference I've made in one interview, I promise it's on trend, but sometimes it's rather insightful. SNL.
Careful, because I'll bring up Jon Stewart. I'll start whipping out my Stewart.
I know. SNL had a sketch called The Race to Avoid Becoming the Loser Who Goes Against George Bush. Now, it was like, Mike Dukakis and Bill Clinton, not Mike Dukakis, it was Bill Clinton and all the cast of characters who were in the primary back in 1992 on the Democratic side. And it went something like this. No, I think you're right. No, Bill, I think you're right. I think you're the one who should be winning this Democratic primary. I think people should vote for you, Bill Clinton. And it went back and forth. Nobody wanted to run against George Bush. And now what happened like a year, less than a year after that? George Bush was defeated. These things in politics swing very quickly. What's most interesting about Obama's numbers is the stark difference between the popularity of him personally and of his policies. And we're talking like 20 to 30 point differentials in some cases. He's liked personally, like his leadership. His charisma or his, way of explaining things or whatever. I mean, take the pick. What they don't really care for, are his more ambitious policy proposals. And
like health care? Are you kidding me? You know what those numbers look like? They're huge.
Look at the cap and trade. You want? I mean, you want? We can go through on these specific things. Even with the massive spending increase.
People don't know what cap and trade. People don't know what cap and trade is.
So, actually, in the states where they've done already some of these ads, they've gone through and they've done some of the ads. Both sides battling out in cap and trade. They've actually done some of the polling in those areas. And the anti-cap and trade side wins once both sides kind of duke it out.
Because you frame it as we're going to tax you.
Well, it's a tax increase.
Well, the
and
other argument when it's fully made is, or the planet blows up, and green jobs. We save the planet and create green jobs. You guys are going to say, but it's going to be a tax. We'd rather have a melted world and no jobs.
At least you're not into scare tactics. Otherwise, the world will blow up.
Well,
the world will melt.
Hey, Jill, I hate to break this newsflash to you, but speaking of our favorite network, MSNBC did a special last weekend. And
are you becoming Joe Biden?
And in 4 years, the Arctic ice shelf is going to melt. In 4 years, scientists say. So I would say that's pretty darn serious. I'm more worried about that.
That's
I am
baloney hogwash.
Two second-tiered missiles coming in from wherever. That's right. Hogwash.
Hey, you have to understand, Nancy, I really am someone who cares about the environment. I'm someone who thinks we also need to spend a lot more time worrying about the sudden impact in environmental damage, such as whether it be acid rain or
We solved acid rain with cap and trade. SO2 Clean Air Act. I was involved. That's how we solved acid rain. It's not even a problem anymore, Joel Mulberry. Got you on that one, my friend. And I only have 30 seconds left. So I'll give you got 10 seconds because I.
So for 100 days of Joe Biden.
Yeah, I only have 10
where
seconds.
Where has Joe Biden gone? where has he gone?
Okay, I think you got your point across on that one. We'll look for the next 100 days with him.
Hey, Nancy, don't go into buses. Don't go into trains. Don't breathe in. Don't get anywhere.
Hey, listen, my trip to Cabo got canceled because of swine flu, so I think I'm with you on that one. That was
By the way, it took White House 20 minutes at a pre-dawn hour.
All right, you win this one. You win this one. Till another day. Joel Mulberry, syndicated columnist at Fox News. Thanks, Joel.
Bye.
I ask you difficult questions. If I make improper suggestions, would you find
no attorneys to plead my case? No OAS to send me in and out of space at my fingers.
And global economic meltdown is not going anywhere, even if I am. This is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner, 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. Just a little programming note, you can catch me on actually both Bill O'Reilly on Fox News and on CNBC tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Isn't that magical how that works? So that means I'm really busy. And as I said, the global economic meltdown is not going anywhere. And it might not be for a long time, according to Dean Baker. He's a co-director for the Center for Economic and Policy Research and author of Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. And his blog, Beat the Press, critiques a lot of the economic writing that is in the media, speaking of CNBC, and I'm on Fox Business and all these places. Dean, thanks for joining me, and thanks for critiquing these guys.
Yeah, someone's got to do it.
Somebody has to do it, yeah. Let's start with the recent kind of news today coming out, and that is there's some word that the White House is laying some groundwork to shake up management at some of these struggling banks. Is that what these bankers have been worried about all along, vis-a-vis wanting to pay back TARP? They don't want any strings attached or the government to say, you guys have screwed this up. So they're trying to get that TARP money back as fast as possible.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, their view is they should just get money from the government, no strings attached. And it's important for people to understand TARP was only one of the ways in which they were getting money from the government. The FDIC was also guaranteeing bonds that the banks issued, and what that meant was you can get below market interest rates. You know, imagine you or I can get the government to guarantee our credit card debt. We pay much less on our credit card. Well, you had the banks, and here I'll mention Goldman Sachs in particular, because they're one of the ones that have been most vociferous. They want to repay the TARP money because they don't want the government interfering with them. Well, they're happy to get these loans guaranteed by the FDIC, so they pay below market interest. Also, in the case of Goldman, they got $12.9 billion basically as a gift from the government through AIG. AIG basically would be bankrupt, the insurance company. Goldman Sachs had contracts, credit default swaps with AIG. Well, if you had contracts with the bankrupt company, you're out of luck, except if the government steps in and hands you the money. And that's exactly what happened there. So they got
money from the Treasury, too. They had the direct shoveling of money from the Treasury in terms of their shoring up their liquidity. So they had money coming in from lots of different avenues of the federal government.
Exactly. So they don't want the TARP money because they don't want it with strings attached, but they're happy to take government money.
Yeah, and so that's why they're a little unnerved today. Some of them felt really good about the stress test. Here's a question I've been asking, Dean. Asked it yesterday. I blogged about it yesterday as well. The stress test, we now know the results, and everyone's, it's not as bad as we thought, which is when you need $75 billion more, that's usually, to me, that's not exactly the time to go pop in the champagne cork. But what I really want to know, Dean, and I don't know if you know this, is did they factor a collapse of the auto industry in that stress test scenarios? Is that one of them? Because that's 1 in 10 jobs. And I'm quite sure they looked at, different GDP numbers and employment numbers. But if you let the entire automotive industry go under, which will have this amazing ripple effect throughout advertising revenues for radio, TV, print, retail, commercial retail, which is, as you know, a very shaky state right now with all the dealerships going bankrupt, that scenario, I don't think they envisioned that. I would guess that was not included in the stress test.
I think they had an overly optimistic scenario. So their baseline scenario assumed that the unemployment rate for this year would average 8.4%. Now, I can't even tell you a story how it averaged 8.4% because the numbers just came out. You saw 8.9% already in April, and it's rising. So how you'd have an average of 8.4, it's almost inconceivable. Now, their negative scenario, their bad scenario, assumed an average 8.9%, but we're already there and it's rising.
I thought it was 10. I thought they went up to 10.
Yeah, well, that's for next year. This is for 2009.
Oh, okay.
So they assumed their bad scenario assumed an average unemployment rate for 2010 of 10.3%, which I think is also probably optimistic because my bet would be that we're looking at an unemployment rate well over 10% by the end of this year, and it will probably continue to rise into next year. So I think both those are optimistic. So if you're asking, did they assume something like you get a collapse of the auto sector and what the implications of that would be? No. I mean, it's their bad scenario. What you want to do with the stress test is say, what's the worst plausible scenario?
Right.
And I'd say instead what they actually have is a relatively optimistic scenario.
So they didn't say worse, they said just really icky.
Yeah,
okay.
That's not a good measure of what the situation is with the banks, because you get into trouble if you assume that things are going to turn out well and they don't.
Right. Now, are you of the Nouriel Roubini school of forecasting? Because I've been following Roubini for a long, long time, and he has to this point been pretty right on. I'm a little concerned that he seems to be continuing to be a little, what's the word, Dr. Doom, as he's called. I am starting to see indicators that things are picking up, and I do believe that there is a reinforcing cycle to that. Consumer confidence numbers ticked up, Dean. You saw a pretty big jump in that. So there are some areas of improvement that would suggest that maybe it's not as bad as he thinks it is.
I think he might be a little overly pessimistic. I mean, I've been one who has been a pessimist. I was warning of this housing bubble collapsing and a severe recession for a number of years.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
But I think that he is somewhat, he has been, I think, somewhat overly pessimistic. But I think we're a long, long way from recovery. And just to take a look today, a lot of people were touting the numbers, the job numbers that came out today, that this was an improvement. And certainly they were better than prior months. But there are important things to keep in mind just right off the bat. We had over 60,000 jobs from the census. I mean, it's a good thing. People are going to work, but that's not going to continue. So if you pull that out, then we lost over 600,000 jobs again this month. the other point, this is a little technical, but we do, these surveys are always rushed out, so they're never complete surveys. And the last 5 months, when they get more complete data, they've revised up the number of job loss by about 70,000 each month. So what we're doing, we're in a situation where we're comparing the data that's unrevised with data from prior months that's been revised, and we go, isn't that great? The number of jobs lost is less in April than it was in March and February and January. Well, I'm a little hesitant to say that because we don't know what it'll look like after we revise it. And if we revise the April numbers the same way we did the March, the February, the January numbers, then the job loss is going to be about the same as those months.
Okay, so you also point to, by the way, Dean Baker, my guest, is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and he will be the keynote speaker at the Michigan Policy Summit here in, that's in Lansing, right, next weekend?
No, it's in Detroit.
It's in Detroit? Oh, you're coming to the Motor City. Excellent.
Yep.
Well, hopefully I'll be able to hear you in person. So you're also pointing out, and he's also the author of Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. You also point out that you don't think the stimulus, the $787 billion, it was so outrageous that they had to have tea protesting parties across the land. That's not even enough money.
Yeah, I mean, what we did there was we just looked at it a little more carefully because, first off, about $80 billion of that was for the alternative minimum tax, which they had to do. It's not adjusted for inflation. Congress has adjusted it every single year for, I don't know, 20 years, however long. It goes back quite some time. So no one expected to pay that tax, so that money's not really stimulus in the sense that there's no one spending more money because of that tax cut, because everyone assumed it would be done in any case. So it left you $700 billion instead of $780. But then on top of that, a lot of that money doesn't get spent in 2009-2010. Again, President Obama tried to have a package that is spent out as quickly as possible, but a lot of these things, you start the project in 2009 or 2010, but it's not completed, so you start to modernize the grid.
The shovel-ready things, right? Or the smart grid, which takes time, you know, implementation, stuff we should have been doing anyways. That's the key thing. We should have been working on a smart grid a long time ago. He's just taking the need, combining the need for immediate stimulus to get the economy out of its moribund state and taking those priorities we needed to do, but the problem is it takes a little bit of time to get that going.
That's right. So if you say what actually is going to be spent in 2009, 2010, well, then it ends up being somewhere around $250-260 billion a year, spending and tax cuts, combining them. And then you go, okay, well, what are the state and local governments doing? Well, even though there's a lot of that actually goes directly to state and local governments to offset their shortfalls are quite large still. So there's still, you have across the country, I know you have it there in Michigan.
Talk about Michigan. Is that why you're here? I mean, here's the problem at the state of Michigan. I worked for the governor. I was on her executive team, and we closed a $2 billion shortfall because, you know, we've been in recession technically for 8 years here in Michigan. People don't realize that, but a technical recession for 8 years because it's the continuing thing. And then, you know, we finally got that closed, and then with this recent, all these recent shutdowns and layoffs, you know, she's looking at another couple billion. What do you do?
Yeah, no, well, you have no choice. I mean, you're really caught in a bind there. So, but when we say what's the net stimulus coming out of the government sector, so combining the cutbacks that you have to have in states like Michigan or Detroit, cities like Detroit, with the stimulus from the federal sector, it ends up only being around $150 billion a year.
Okay, you know, and on that note, I got to take a break here. When we come back, I'll save the, okay, how do we get out of this one, Ollie, on the other side of the break, now that we know we've defined the problem. Dean Baker will help us figure out what do we do about that one as we continue. 1-888-64-NANCY on the Nancy Skinner Show. Okay, come on. There's solutions out there. We'll find them. We'll search far and wide and find those solutions. Hopefully, maybe, as we continue on the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm talking to Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, author of Plunder and Blunder, The the rise and fall of the bubble economy. I like that, Dean. Plunder and blunder, they kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Well, I sure have in this downturn.
You know, speaking of that, before we get to sort of solutions here and what to do about this shortfall in stimulus, that's what we just talked about, not enough, plunder and blunder. During the break, Dean and I were talking about the difference between the treatment of the financials and the autos. And you guys all know I go crazy about that, but Dean agrees with me that there's been a wholesale, complete different treatment of the financial sector with the manufacturing sector.
Yeah, I mean, the financial sector has really been treated with kid gloves, even though they're the ones that really brought on this problem. I mean, you could say, you know, Ford, GM, Chrysler, the big three made a lot of mistakes, no doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
But the reason they're on their backs right now isn't because they made mistakes. The reason they're on their backs is because of this downturn brought on by the financial industry. I mean, even Toyota, which everyone agrees is a top manufacturer, they lost $7 billion last year.
Yeah, sales, and their sales percent was down higher than anyone else almost, I think I saw in the last week. Their numbers were down.
So this isn't the auto industry's doing. I mean, you know, again, plenty of problems, but this is brought on first and foremost by what went on in the financial sector. So here it is. You have the same weekend that Larry Summers, President Obama's head of his National Economic Council, was lecturing the country in reference to the AIG bonuses about the sanctity of contract. They're saying that the auto workers have to give up the retiree health benefits that not only have they bargained for, but they already work for you. People work for them 30 years, they're retired. They're going to take that away from them.
And that was in a contract. It's contract law.
Exactly. And they already did the work. They did the work 30 years ago in some cases.
Yeah, I was on a TV show, one of them. I can't even remember. I've been talking about this a lot lately where they said, well, the bondholders are got to take all the risk in this deal, and the UAW has been made whole. I said, what are you talking about? In the Chrysler situation, Dean, the bondholders that held out, the hedge funds that held out, who now want to be anonymous as they go through bankruptcy, we know that they bought their junk bonds somewhere between 30 and 60 cents on the dollar, and they got offered 33 cents on the dollar. The UAW is being asked to take a $50 billion obligation for their health care and pension down to $10 billion and get basically equity, like hope that maybe someday we'll give you health care. Well, there's no, you know.
Yeah, the auto workers are giving up a lot in this story. And, yeah, you're exactly right about the bondholders. They came in there, President Obama, exactly right. They were speculators, and that's fine. You know, you want to speculate, speculate, but you lost. You know, the president standing up to you and saying no, that was a bet you took, and you lost. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. And it seems to continue again with the situation ongoing, the stabilization plan, and our auto industry is in crisis. All right, so we all know that. I go on and on and on about that, Dean, because someone has to, and I'm in Detroit, and so that's my job. But let's look at the bigger picture here, because you do now have this political environment that's very the idea of saying fiscal spending, we need more stimulus. You know, it's a toxic word, even though it's the antidote that's going to get us through this. I keep trying to explain to people deflationary downward spirals are not pretty places to be.
Yeah.
And Japan, did you see that? They're in deflation. They had price deflation, and we've been inching ever closer to that without a serious injection of cash. So what do we do? How do you say we need more stimulus and quicker? It needs to get into the pipeline quicker, right?
Yeah.
How do we do that in this environment where it's so politicized and it was hard to do the first round?
It obviously is a political issue, and we just have to find ways to sell the public on it. I mean, we are seeing higher unemployment. We're losing more jobs, and better or worse, it's not about to stop. And, you know, we could go with the Republicans who want to yell and scream, and they have their line about President Obama spends too much, taxes too much, and borrows too much. But the real line is that the Republicans talk too much and say too little. We need to do something. So they could go around with their lines and their tea bags, but that's not going to employ people. You have to spend money to employ people. And it shouldn't be that hard to understand. I mean, you know, we're talking about more government deficits and other things equal, that's not good. But would you rather have the government borrow money? Or do you want to be out of work? Do you want your kids out of work? Do you want other family members out of work? I just don't. Those are the choices. So,
you know, Dean, people? I think I like the framing things and stuff all the time. Is it a simple message if we were all on the same page saying three letters FDR? He did it. It worked. You know, FDR, same sort of economic situation. You had that deflation. You had that. And they spent, they had their moment where they stopped and it got worse, but then they got it right, right?
That's right, that's right. And the economy grew very rapidly. It's quite striking. I was amazed because people ask about it. Of course, most people, I certainly wasn't alive in the 30s, not that many people around today who were. But the economy grew very rapidly. So if you go 33 to 37 when he came in there and he was spending money, the economy grew more than 10% a year. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And, you know, we didn't get back to full employment, but the unemployment rate when he came in 33 was around 25%, about 24. And it got under 10% in 37 when he cut back. You know, he had all the,
right.
blue dogs of his day, his inner blue dog, you know, and he suddenly decided he had to balance the budget. But the unemployment rate came down very rapidly. So it wasn't where you want it to be, but I'll tell you, 10% is a hell of a lot better than 25.
And I mean, we've been down this road before. I think that's the easiest way to pull it together. Unfortunately, I am out of time. So, Gene, people could check out your work at Beat the Press, your blog. Your book is Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. I'll see you at the Michigan Policy Summit next weekend. And I thank you very much for helping to enlighten us today.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet, Gene. All right. Have a good day. Thanks. All right. Coming up on the Nancy Skinner Show, remember, Ed Nixon, Richard Nixon's brother, will be on the program today, of all days, on the Nancy Skinner Show.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around.
All right, some inside baseball going on here, Craig, with his welcome back. It's so good. I have to share it with you on this, the final day of the most recent incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show. If you missed the first hour. Okay, here's what gives. I owe you an explanation. What we had to do today was, what a day. I mean, this is my day. At 1-888-64 Nancy. I am back live. That's 1-888-2629. We'll keep that number, by the way. It's not going anywhere. But I announced at the beginning of the show that we are going to take the show on hiatus, okay, the show itself, given the developments. And you should sign up at the website, nancyskinnerlive.com, because not only will you know when I'm on TV, and I'm going to tell you a really pretty good story, even though my detractors are going to be so proud of me, but also we're going to be doing some special things with the website we've been developing. There's been a lot. The version 3 comes out soon, and I'll be doing some stuff. I'll be doing webcasts and podcasts and all kinds of stuff like that, blogging. All of those elements are going to be a part of the new media strategy, which you all know that's where it's going, right? We're going to have applications that you can download on your BlackBerry and on your iPhone, and you can get me no matter what station wants me. How's that for making trouble? How's that for causing trouble? That's what we're going to do. I don't need to be up on some big satellite. They put $2 billion in the sky and they're going out of business. Nope. I'll find a way. I'll find a way around that bus. You better believe it. All right. So that's why you really have to sign up at nancyskinnerlive.com. I did read that today, that XM Sirius are in big financial trouble, huge losses, and they said they had a lot of complaints from listeners about changes in programming, and I think it's when they dropped me. Actually, that was a little piece of it. But here's what we did. Okay, just coming up in the program, Ed Nixon, Richard Nixon's brother, is coming up. How ironic. It just was timed that way. And so we've had this ongoing dispute about, you know, obviously on the show, about whether now is the time to pursue torture. And a lot of people are so mad at me because I said, I really want cap and trade for it. Just get the planets at stake. And I do believe we need to do it. And so it cost me a lot of grief. I had someone, you know, yesterday I got a picture from, somebody took my picture from the internet and made me out to be like the devil and did all this stuff and sent it to me because I go on Fox, Nancy on Fox, and you know, it's cost me so much that I go on the other side from the left, actually. I usually get it from the right, and I'm going to give you the farewell edition of Love Letters before we leave today. But, you know, just really crazy stuff from the left. It's been a weird, weird experience because I consider myself solidly Democratic. Okay, so you'd be very proud of me because today, of all days, we ended up knowing that we were going to go on hiatus. We shot out an email. Here's the plan. Let's do the TV and the web and the book, which I've been haven't had the time to work on, and we'll do podcasting and get back on webcasting, and then we're going to go back to full terrestrial radio in the fall. And pulled that trigger. It's a sad day for me, in a way, because I feel like we've all grown. There's a connection. There's a very personal connection. Let's put it that way. It's not just you. It's me too. I feel it too. I read your emails, and everyone knows I'm sensitive. I'm Pisces. I get that your skin isn't thick enough. I get all this stuff. You know, and that's me. That's how I am. And I took a lot of heat over the torture issue. I should tell you that. Well. I get the calls today that they wanted me to be on Bill O'Reilly tonight. And they wanted me to tape it in the middle of my show. And, you know, that is the biggest show in television. The topic was, the reason I did this, they said, it's torture. What are the odds of this happening, okay? And then I said, okay, we will do this. And we pre-taped that interview with Dean Baker right before the show. So you have live current programming. You didn't miss anything. This was headlines of today. I just ran out the door over to the studio where we tape the production studio TV stuff and taped my segment for Bill O'Reilly, and it was on torture. And this is one you're going to have to watch, my friends. I'm sorry. Well, you're going to have to flip back and forth as the day went on because CNBC called me, and I will be live, actually, on CNBC. This is all. This is going to take place at 8. If you're listening live, this will be 8 o'clock Eastern time. I will be on CNBC for two segments tonight, talking about the auto industry, my favorite subject, and the banks, another favorite. Is Obama and Geithner in control of this situation? So I will be on two networks at the same time. But here's why you got to watch both of them. Tape one. We'll have it all on my website. And watch the other. Go back and forth. I actually got Bill O'Reilly to concede that I was right about torture. Yep, I got Bill O'Reilly to say that torture didn't help us win World War II. I got him to concede the point on torture. You would have been very proud of me. Let's just say I felt I was empowered with the energy of all of my listeners. When I rushed over there, this is the crazy day I have. I know it's my last show. I've got Ed Nixon. I've got two TV appearances. Had to go to my makeup studio first. Rush over there. Sit in the chair. Boom, boom, boom. This is how it's all going to go, and it's torture, and I know how delicate that issue is with everybody. And I made it over there, sat down in the chair just in time. To have him, actually what he did is he pulled out, President Obama had, and I don't want to give it away because that's the whole thing. So President Obama had used Churchill as an example. He said, Churchill has said, we don't torture. Let's just give you that much of an appetite wedding to watch. And then you can email me and tell me how I did, okay? Even the folks that hate my guts. Because I'm a wimp about this issue, and it's not that I'm a wimp. I've just felt that we have some priorities right now on this precipice that has to get done right now, or we're really screwed, and that we can go back and prosecute at some time, and that's not that I don't think the rule of law. I've made that argument many times, and I've taken a lot of heat for it, but I think you folks in particular will be very proud of me and how I performed on that Bill O'Reilly segment today, tonight. And so then, we will have Ed Nixon. I'm here. I'm back. I'm live. A little trick of radio. And we'll be doing CNBC live tonight. So this has been kind of a crazy, crazy day. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to take a little break. Yeah, I'm going to break a little early here and regather the troops. I got some emails. I am interested because here's the thing. The important thing. Now, my larger point about that has been, here I'm on the right-wing network and kind of, you know, MSNBC and Fox. Here I'm always trying to straddle the divide, right? How odd is it that at the same time that I end up on both, straddling the divide, and then I beat Bill O'Reilly on the torture thing on the biggest show on cable, and then I'm going to have Ed Nixon on. And to my other point about vengeance and what you think you're going to get out of it, I've been wanting to give you the Frost Nixon, blow it for you for a, I keep forgetting to do it. And then on that day, I go, oh, it's my last day. I have to do that. Who's on my lineup? Ed Nixon. Now, tell me that is not strange indeed, and that everything doesn't happen for a reason. So, just like Hillary Clinton is the best Secretary of State and so impressive, and we all were duking it out during that primary, and Obama is handling this economic crisis with his team in a way that I can't imagine anyone else could have. So, everything does happen for a reason in strange ways on this, the very last day of this incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show. I got trouble. That's what I got for you all. It is the Nancy Skinner Show. I'm Nancy Skinner. 1-888-64 Nancy. That's 1-888-6. What is it? Should I know my number by now? 1-888-646-2629 on the day before we go into hiatus. But we're not on our. I mean, you got to sign up on the website, Nancy at nancyskinnerlive.com. I'm getting lots of emails pouring in, and we'll be talking in a few minutes to Ed Nixon. I just think it is very ironic. I'm getting some very nice emails about. Let's see, Sunny Side Up. I like that. That's a very nice email. I've always found when I hit a stumble in the road and something seems to come to a halt, it's always for the best, and something better comes along. Letting go and trusting has its rewards. Looking forward to hearing you again in the near future. Well, thank you, and I agree with that. And then from James, James has just, man, this guy has given me a hard time with some of his emails. Unbelievable. hard time. And he actually wrote about, because I was just on a rally, and how ironic is it that I got, went on the biggest show, as much as you hate it, it's the biggest show on cable television, and got him to concede the point on torture. Me, of all people. So that's got to throw you for a loop, huh? Because that was the issue that Churchill said we didn't use torture, and it turned out that the Guardian reported that they actually had, in fact... Here's a story. And it is in The Guardian. They sent me the story, The Secrets of the London Cage, that they, despite what Churchill said, that there was, in the middle of London, there was three Palace Gardens homes, three exclusive homes that were used as essentially torture chambers, beatings, sleep deprivation, and starvation used on SS and Gestapo men. And this is a Guardian UK article. In there, as you see, I pointed out, this came out in 2005, and it was never, nothing has ever connected the knowledge of Churchill to this, you know, to that Churchill knew about the cages in London, because he's out there saying he had been tortured, and so we don't know that. It actually kind of raises the question of who knew what and when, where, right, and why we should. So it's just sort of ironic that I'm dealing with both sides of this issue. And I had your backside, people. I had, trust me, when I go on these shows, I know what I'm doing. Don't try this at home. I know what I'm doing. Even when people yell at someone, you'll hear in my love letters, yeah, even the hair, it's part of the act, people, okay? Don't worry about it. Don't let the hair fool you. I know what I'm doing. Let's go to the phones at 1-888-64-NANCY as we're wrapping up here with Sherry in Buffalo. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Nancy.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I just want to say thank you to you and just give you a word or six of praise to tell you how much I've enjoyed your show and how great you are, and thank you so much. And in the words of Fleetwood Mac, please don't stop.
I won't, Sherry. Let me ask you a question. What is it that you do?
I'm a musician.
Wow. There you go.
You could have guessed that, right?
Yeah, you're in Buffalo, and you're a
yes.
musician.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you play in a band? Or you?
Yes, my husband and I have a band. I play keyboards, and we're old rockers, you know. We have a cover band, but we're also involved in a lot of original projects. We have a... Actually, we're having a CD release party tomorrow, but I didn't call up for a commercial.
No, but you know what I'm trying to get at, Sherry? So how are things for you? How's the economy in Buffalo?
Very tough.
Yeah.
Especially in the club scene. I mean, I've found in the past that when times get tough, people drink more, but it ain't happening now. People are staying home, and I can understand it completely. You know, it's very hard. Live music is very precious and close to my heart, and it's always a struggle to get live music happening, so... Right now, it's very difficult.
Yeah, you know, beer sales are up. Club sales are down. I read this article that beer sales are up. People are, you know, finding ways to self-medicate. And, you know, the lower brands, the lower cost brands are up. But you know what you do? When you provide live music, you give people the break that they need. So, you know, think of it that way. I know that what I've done, despite the slings and arrows, I know that I've engaged people in a conversation at a time in our history that I can't remember. You know, I know we've gone through a lot of stuff, but this seems to be a little scarier than, you know, a lot of the stuff we've been through. And so when I do, I know that it helps people, and that gives me the satisfaction of continuing to do it. When I go on Fox, you think that's fun to have to do? It really isn't. I mean, it's not.
I admire you for that. Really, I do.
It's after so many years of doing it, it's not, you know, it's not like exactly, even radio, people think it's a glamorous. It's a lot of work, and you got to stay up on everything and then go get beat up. But there are calls, and people like you, you're doing the same thing for people. You play some music. You make them feel better. When you put them in a better place in that moment, if they've had that moment, then they're going to be better people to the people around them. And
well, I can totally relate, and thank you so much.
Goes on.
I mean, you're going to be so missed, so God bless.
Thanks,
and
Sherry.
Godspeed, and, you know, may it all go well down the road for you.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate you calling. All righty, let's move on. Let's get John in Los Angeles into the conversation. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi, Nancy. Listen, I wanted to thank you again for the common sense you had about the automobile industry in Detroit and how important that is, and the union, the automobile unions, and so that was great. And also, listen, there are three verses in the Bible that absolutely show that God is not against abortion, that life begins at birth. When the baby begins to breathe. Can I give them to you real quick?
Oh, I don't usually like people quoting scripture, John. I'm sorry. I just, that's kind of a rule of mine. Is
yep.
When people start quoting scripture, I have to say that I don't do that because it turns into a whole thing. But I appreciate you bringing that subject up about the automotive industry. I'm not going to get morose here because I'm not going to. This is, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's all good. We'll be talking to Ed Nixon here, but... I got to say this about the auto industry, because I do feel that that issue was one that, you know, maybe the timing was exceptional for me to bring that to the forefront in a way. And I don't want it to get lost. I really don't, because I ran as a critic against the auto industry because of their past practices. And that's what we're talking about right now within the auto industry, is how do you get past? I said, listen, I'm talking to company people saying, people still have past practices and the bad behavior of these companies on their minds as they consider whether to buy a car from an American manufacturer or whether to support a taxpayer bailout. We have to address that, okay? And they are getting it. They are understanding what you have said to me. That I talk to people every day who are still mad about that. But I want you to take with you this understanding that a lot of those people are gone, and there is an awakened group of people who completely get it, who are running, you know, as fast as they possibly can to get there. With the announcement the other day, 2 days ago, that Ford is building a new facility in Michigan, and it's going to be an electric Ford Focus, all electric vehicle. So that's big news. So they're going to try to outdo GM. Has the Chevy Volt coming out next Thanksgiving. That's how close we are to mass production of fully functional electric vehicles that are going to kick Prius's butt. Much better. And it's this close, but it does take time. So as they are understanding your concerns, and yes, it took a crisis, as it often does, for them to get it. I admit that. I absolutely admit that. But I want you to understand that their crisis is your crisis, our crisis. We have to manufacture things in this country. They get it. They're making a turnaround, doing a lot heck of a better job than the banks at transparency and trying to do what's right with the auto team and the Obama team and the American public. And I want you to take another look. And when you're talking to folks, this is about America, okay? This is not just another consumer purchase. Manufacturing does matter, and it's about America. So I ask you that you don't let this issue go when I'm gone, because I'll be talking about it on TV in here, which is not with you every day. So it's your job to carry on as that goes. Coming up, the brother of Richard Nixon and his amazing story, really. You'll be shocked. My conversation with Ed Nixon, coming up next on the Nancy Skinner Show. Too. It's time to go. Ed Nixon's not ready. What do you know? Go figure. After all that, on my what was to be in a synchronistic buildup. We'll be getting him on the phone here. On the Nancy Skinner Show, on the last day of this incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show, 1-888-64-NANCY. Okay, so this gives me a chance to do what I wanted to do on the set this up with the Frost Nixon thing, because I've been reading through the book, and I watched the movie Frost Nixon. And it's out on DVD, I think, now. I highly recommend that you see this movie. Really good. I heard it got panned, but it was really good. But I'm going to warn you, I'm going to blow it for you right now, because I'm going to blow the ending for you right now. Here's a setup to the movie, and I think here's the analogy. This is why it sort of blew my mind. Watergate. I was 12 years old and fascinated with Watergate. I know that sounds hard to believe. Nancy, fascinated with politics, but it's the one book that everyone has one book from the library that they kept. I mean, I paid for it, paid fines. Actually, I lost it, paid the fines, and then eventually just paid for it. But it was on Watergate, and I was 12. Yes, I'm a geek, but I knew that should have said I loved politics, right? Right there. And you know, just the intrigue of that, and sort of the duality of this man. Who did some good things, but did some really bad things, and how it could continue to snowball at that level of corruption, and how all the media, you know, interacted, and the watchdogs, and the deep throat, and couldn't get enough as a kid of Watergate. So I was really eager to see, you know, and I've seen a lot of books about and movies about President Richard Nixon since, and Frost Nixon, of course, being the latest movie, and that was a whole different, completely different take on on this man, Richard Nixon. And then I received the book The Nixons, A Family Portrait, by Ed Nixon and co-authored by Karen Olson. And as it turns out, we do have Mr. Nixon. We have found him. And so, first of all, let me just welcome him to the program. Mr. Nixon, thanks for joining us.
Good to hear from you, Nancy.
Now, just to set the scene here a little bit with your book, this is just out. Is this just out? Did you time this with Frost Nixon?
No, I think Frost Nixon was timed with mine.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
I don't know who was timing. We weren't timing. I was telling the story that was in construction for 25 years, and we finally got it published and released on President's Day, February 16th.
So you've been working on this for 25 years?
Well, I have, but I didn't have the help of my co-author, who really did the research and things that needed to be done to confirm stories that I had in my mind and my records, and she really did a great job for it.
Now, let me get to you a little bit first here. Ed Nixon, the youngest of five Nixons.
Right.
And you, because a lot of people, when I said I'm having Richard Nixon's brother on, they're like, he has brothers? I mean, your brother was so famous that, you know, that's just, it's part of what you would expect. But your resume, sir, is very impressive to me. Bachelor's and master's from Duke and North Carolina State, working in your whole career as an advisor on the field of earth science and improving the environment. Currently president of Nixon World Enterprises and chairman of Pyron Solar Advisory Board in San Diego, California. So you've been all about renewable energy? What's your life endeavor been?
Well, it's been a wide variety from everything from cleaning up the environmental messes left in old mining sites with tailings piles and whatnot, which I discussed with Dick back in the days he was in Congress, and eventually that idea seemed to blossom into what eventually became the Environmental Protection Agency. But many other things, clean extraction, waste management, recovery of valuable materials from waste that otherwise we have to extract again the hard way. So it's been a wide variety. But right now, energy independence, which Dick called for back in 1971, but he had a Democratic Congress. And again, Jerry Ford tried to follow on with the same thing. And not until we had Jimmy Carter with a Congress on his side did we get a Department of Energy, which I suppose it succeeded in protecting some of our atomic secrets. But then we've come to a point now where we are in a very critical condition, depending so much on foreign sources of petroleum. And for years, long before we even got into this world, I was interested in finding ways to extract hydrogen from water without burning carbon.
Electrolysis. One of my pastimes as well. That's interesting. Now, tell me a little bit about what it was like. You were working on these environmental issues. Are you saying that your work in that affected? I know that President Nixon, that was one of his crowning achievements. Okay, let's start with that. The environment has been my life's work as well, sir. And so for me, I often remind people, I think it was the NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, that was passed under his administration. That's correct, right?
That's right.
Which is the, for folks who don't know what NEPA is, it was the first sort of omnibus type of legislation saying that the government had a role in protecting the environment, and it was far-reaching in its requirements. Do you feel like, Ed, that your brother, that he didn't get enough credit for being essentially the first president who was an environmentalist?
Well, it was ignored greatly, but then he wasn't looking for recognition so much as he wanted to see what could be done if government had a limited role in encouraging the citizens to really look out for what's treasured out there. And I think we succeeded. I think he was a little concerned, perhaps after it all went together, that the EPA would come down too hard on industry and we'd not even have the resources to clean up the environment.
Mm.
So, you know what? If you stop the miner, they're not going to take the wealth out of the ground, and there's be no wealth to put back, make it better than nature gave it to us. So
yeah, until you run out.
It's needed.
So as the youngest of five brothers, what was that like to see him? He had many a setback in his career, and then ultimately ascended to the presidency. Did you feel left out, left behind, watching this?
Not at all. You know, the five boys. Well, three of us that survived the tragedies of the early, the 30s. But Don, Dick, and I were all different. We were not encouraged to do any one thing or another, but to do the best we could in what we chose to do. Don was a very generous, wonderful entertainer and chef, especially when it came to fine cuts of meat. He was a butcher in the Gold grocery store. Dick was assigned the vegetable department, and he used to drive over to the farmer's market in L.A. at the crack of dawn and pick up the best we could find and provide it. And me, I was 17 years and 15 years younger than the two of them. And,
I'm sorry, say that again. You were how many years younger?
17 years younger than Dick, 15 years younger than Don. So they were like surrogate fathers. When my dad would quiet down a minute, they'd pick up the ball and keep going. So I had impact from all three.
So that age difference probably impacted a lot. You were probably at the height of his presidency. What were you doing when he was president at that point?
Oh, I was in graduate school when he went into Senate. And when Eisenhower picked him in 1952, I was just heading into NC State. And in 54, finished graduate school, went into the field, in the oil fields, which I didn't really enjoy, but the work was great. But I didn't like the idea of pulling oil out of the ground. I still don't. But we have to do it because we don't want to pull oil from any of those guys that are probably going to be enemies if we keep doing it.
Well, yeah. And we got to wait until we run out, which is probably sooner rather than later, but that's not the debate for this. So did you spend a lot of time at the White House with your brother? Did you go there a lot? Did you have a close relationship and hang out in the West Wing?
I didn't hang out so much as I was occasional guest at the White House. My wife and I visited a couple of times with our kids and alone once. But the main effect or interchange we had was by telephone and occasional message regarding issues of the day, especially in my field. He was always after me to contribute some ideas, and then I would question him on what he was doing. And one of the surprises, of course, was in 71 when Marv Kalb interviewed me in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel on the, what was it, when he going off the gold standard, so to speak. And I had no I was not informed of what was coming down, and that was something that was I was really wondering, why would we do that? Well, I'm not the economist, and I don't intend to become one, but I would say that the values that we have in the way of resources need to be treasured and guarded and retained as much as we can, and I don't like the idea today of continuing the old world of alchemy and making political alchemy by trying to make gold out of paper. It won't work, and it will fail eventually.
You're talking about the banking crisis, I infer?
Let them go, and if they find another way, there's a better way than to have government get too much involved. We're really getting it way too big. I know you may disagree with that, but government must be limited.
Yeah. I actually, sir, I ran against President Obama in the U.S. Senate primary in Illinois, so I was one of the surrogates on his team, and I think that faced with the unprecedented sort of circumstances and the systemic connection between these institutions, that they had, you know, like you will say, and when we come back, I want to talk about what your brother walked into and what how you are portraying it in the book, The Nixons, A Family Portrait, and what you're trying to do with that, Ed Nixon. But I think no one has any idea when they walk in the door. It seems like every president, when they walk in that door, and their life changes in that moment, and the weight of the world is on your shoulders in a way that none of us could ever know.
Enormous, you're right.
An enormous way. So Ed Nixon is with me. He'll be back, and he's got a book, The Nixons. It's really fascinating. I told you before he came on, I told everyone I was fascinated at 12 years old with Watergate. That was the only book I ever stole from the library. So this is really good stuff for me. I've been interested in that, and I'll touch on that in the Nixon legacy as we come back with Ed Nixon. Thank you so much. Hold on. 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. The last program for this incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show.
I want to love. I want to hide. I want to tell.
Nancy's going to show. Nancy's going to 1-888-64-NANCY, the number to the program. I am having a most fascinating conversation with Ed Nixon, the youngest brother of former President Richard Nixon. He's written the book, The Nixons, A Family Portrait. Mr. Nixon, what are you trying to accomplish with your book? I know you go through the whole family. You cover all the issues related to your brother. But what is it that you set out to do?
I think the real mission we had in writing this is to tell the stories that make the family appear as the foundation from which we got a man like Richard Nixon and the rest of us, of course. But the importance of family is hidden in the book, I suppose, in the way you think about it. But how the parents interacted with the kids and what the kids did with that interaction, it comes out in subtle ways throughout our lives. And I still believe that strong families form the heart of a great nation. And if we rely on anything else, we'll fall apart. We've got to have strong families, and parents being the most important professionals in the world. Next to them come the first grade teachers, I suppose, but parents are really where it all begins and where it will survive.
So, and I absolutely agree with you, and it comes out in your book. But let me, I have to ask you this, sir. Obviously, the history books will always equate President Nixon with Watergate and the first resignation of any president. As you reflect back on that, having lived through it as his brother, and I watched the movie Frost Nixon, was there ever any moment that you and he had that he actually said, this is the biggest mistake of my life? That's what Frost Nixon was trying to get to in the movie. Like, despite all these great things I did, boy, did I go wrong. And did you ever feel that he said that to you, to the public? Did the public feel like they got that?
I did have a private meeting with him toward the end of, I guess it was 1991, I think. Anyway, looking back on the effect of Watergate, and I do have the original Frost-Nixon interviews, and what you're referring to is a movie, which is entertainment and a lot of inaccuracies and innuendo that mislead. But on the other hand, it is an event that is not to be denied, an event that caused my brother to resign in honor of the office that he considered higher than any man. And that's why he resigned, not in disgrace, but in honor. Looking back at it, in that conversation later in his life, I asked, how do we look at Watergate? How do you think the history will show that it had meaning? And he said, well, all in all, the whole picture, the whole life, the whole record of our family will come to the fore, and you will see that this is a significant incident, but as I pointed out in the book, by quoting President Clinton in his fine eulogy, you have to look at the whole life of a man, and it takes a long time to get that out.
Well, what you've done, sir, and I have just 10 seconds left to thank Ed Nixon, what you've done is, I think, display that in the book, The Nixons, and I thank you, Ed Nixon, for joining me and sharing that with us.
Admire your spirit. Keep it up.
Thank you. Ed Nixon, Richard Nixon's brother. We'll continue on the Nancy Stewart Show. I promise you, I will keep doing what I'm doing. If you promise me, you'll follow me wherever you go. An easy way to do that is nancyskinnerlive.com. I didn't say that correctly, did I? Nancyskinnerlive.com, my website. Just completing an interview with Ed Nixon. Richard Nixon's brother, which is really strange, because I think it's threading a needle that I've been working at for a very long time. I've been wanting to, I saw the movie Frost Nixon recently, and I've been wanting to play a little bit of it for you. Let me set this up before I do. As we do this show, if you're just tuning in, this is my last show for this incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show as we're going into hiatus. But we'll be doing stuff on the website, podcasting. You're not going to lose my voice or not see me on TV because I'm doing that. I'm on Bill O'Reilly tonight as well as CNBC at 8 o'clock live on CNBC talking to my favorite subject, the autos. And I will continue to be doing that kind of thing. I was actually supposed to catch a flight after all this and be in Fox to tape Huckabee tomorrow, but that isn't happening this weekend. So that's why you need to sign up, because I'm going to focus on that, which was part of my plan in the first place. Our plan, our team, we have a team that has been working on this before any of this particular show happened. We had a plan that we were going to implement, so we're going to spend some time working on those other aspects, and I will be back on terrestrial radio. But here's the point that I think Frost Nixon, that I wanted to get out, is that of the movie. I think so many people, because of the Bush years and of 8 years of the just absolute hand-wringing crap that we had to go through from the election day, and I published an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune the day after the election that was entitled The Forest Through the Trees. And it was about how outrageous the Supreme Court decision was in Bush v. Gore, that they could put the principle that the Supreme Court of the United States stopped the counting of votes in this country because they didn't want to cast a cloud over a shadow over the presidency of George W. Bush, that they don't have any power without the consent of the governed. That was my point. And I went back and compared that to what's the name of the ruling? Former Supreme Court ruling on race, and said it will be the black mark, this ruling on the Supreme Court, and I stand by that to this day. And then went through 8 years of the war in Iraq on the air as a lone voice saying, wait a minute, Bin Laden and Hussein, they have nothing to do, it's not true that they're allied, and fighting that battle on radio and on TV. So trust me, folks. Abu Ghraib, all that stuff. I was in either in politics or doing it, and I it hurt me too. I couldn't believe that our country had gotten to that place, and at the same time decided I needed to throw my hat in the ring and ran for office myself. And as you all know, ended up in a race with the president, who's just the epitome, the opposite, embodies everything different, which is let's look forward, let's solve problems. And look at how the public has responded. And so as we debate this question of whether we want to go backward or forward, I just have this to put a bug in your ear. And I'm on O'Reilly tonight, and I got him to concede I was right on torture. Now, that isn't easy to do, okay? So on my last day, I think that's a crowning achievement, in fact, that I did that. But look, listen, everybody wants, like, you're going to feel better. You're just going to have that moment where you feel better. And I don't think, and I wanted to get that out of Ed Nixon, I don't think anyone ever felt better. I don't think Bush going to jail and the whole process playing out on TV and we obsess about it every single day, nothing gets done, we're not going to feel better. And in this movie, Frost Nixon, it's the story of an Australian journalist who scored the interview of all interviews. They thought he'd be a total pushover, Richard Nixon. And so he scored a series of 10 interviews, and all the people around him were so hungry and eager to have that moment where they could get their vengeance and get him to, you know, confess. And through 9 of these interviews, forget his first name, the interviewer, Frost, whatever his name is, David Frost, I believe it was, Nixon got the better of him. So on TV, Nixon got the better of him and turned it, just like we're going to see, torture back. They do better when it's in their ballgame. That is their ballgame, to be talking about torture. Trust me, they want to be talking about torture. They don't want to talk about jobs and the economy and all these things like that, because they lose that argument. That, my case in point, is the election, because that's what Obama focused on. But in this interview with Nixon, finally, in the very, very last interview, David Frost got serious, and he decided that he was going to make his mark. He was being ridiculed as a terrible journalist, and he was going to make his mark. And with all the drama that Nixon brought to that he was winning the game, this, I'm going to blow it for you, this is the final scene of Frost Nixon.
David, 4, 3, 2, and...
Mr. President, we were talking about the period March 21st to April 30th and the mistakes you made and so on, and I was wondering, would you go further than mistakes, the word that seems not enough for people to understand?
Well, what word would you express?
My goodness. All right. Since you've asked me, I think there are three things that people would like to hear you say. One, that there was probably more than mistakes. There was wrongdoing. And yes, it might have been a crime, too. Secondly, that I did abuse the power I had as president. And thirdly, I put the American people through 2 years of needless agony. And I apologize for that. And I know how difficult it is for anyone, especially you. But I think that people need to hear it. And I think that unless you say it, you're going to be haunted for the rest of your life.
Well, it's true. I made mistakes. Horrendous ones. Ones that were not worthy of a president. Ones that did not meet the standards of excellence that I always dreamed of as a young boy. But if you remember, it was a difficult time. I was caught up in a five-front war against a partisan media, a partisan House of Congress, a partisan Irvin Committee. But, yes, I will admit there were times I did not fully meet that responsibility, and I was involved in a cover-up, as you call it. And for all those mistakes, I have a very deep regret. No one can know what it's like to resign the presidency. Now, if you want me to get down on the floor and grovel, no. Never. I still insist they were mistakes of the heart. They were not mistakes of the head, but they were my mistakes. I don't blame anybody. I brought myself down. I gave them a sword, and they stuck it in, and they twisted it with relish. And I guess if I'd been in their place, I'd have done the same thing.
And the American people?
Them down. I let down my friends. I let down the country. And worse,
he let down what he believed in. If you think that George Bush is ever going to have that moment where he says, I let you down. I let the American people down. And we spend a year, 2 years, 3 years trying to get to that moment, and you're all going to feel better. I can't see it happening. That's how I feel. Meanwhile, lots in front of us. Lots that requires our immediate attention. And we can feel good about that. We will feel good about that. When we have health care on that day, if Senator Kennedy is alive to sign that bill, we will feel great about that. And when we pass cap and trade legislation, and a great environmental legislation we know puts us on a course to sustain this planet, we'll feel great about that. That will be cause to celebrate in the street. I'll be back with one more segment on the Nancy Skinner Show. Goodbye for now. It is Nancy Skinner Show, the last segment, actually, of this incarnation of the Nancy Skinner Show. Let's get Pat in here quickly. Hi, Pat.
Hey there, Nancy.
How are you?
I'm hanging in there, and I hope you are as well. And oh, man, you killed me with that song, because I'm, you know, I'm sad to see you go. You know, over here in L.A., I've made sure to complain with K-Talk, and I appreciate you a lot because... a departure from Randy was she kind of complained too much, and you just kept it straight and have given us a lot of good information and a lot of financial information, which people really need, and that's really important these days with what's going on. So, I appreciate your financial background and your input and also holding up the effort of the auto industry, I think is really important as well.
Well, thank you, Pat.
Job well done. Keep it up and keep your chin up and keep doing a fantastic job.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, sir. I will. You can rest on that. Okay. Thanks, Pat.
Right on. Thank you.
Okay. Great. So I thought I'd wind up. Let me do this. I got to say my thank yous here real quickly. And then I'm going to give you my farewell, love you, hate you, love letters edition for the road to make you laugh. I want to thank, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben Birch has archived all of my shows on there. So if you need your Skinner fix, you can get them. And, you know, Ben does all this without getting paid. So, man, that guy, he's working hard for all archiving all these shows. It'd be great to give him a donation for all that hard work and doing that for all this time. My webmaster, Sharon Baseman, is a gem, is the most wonderful, efficient person. I can't manage my life without her. She's not going anywhere. Thank you, Sharon. John Krieger, my producer, on the other end of this line, has become, he and I are like, if you only saw what was going on, and when we come back in our new incarnation, you will, with webcams of the whole show. Krieg, you do a great job, buddy, and I'm happy that you're going to be hanging with me. My business partner, I have to thank him. He picked this up. He's kind of a meaty, shy guy, so I'm not going to say his name. But he picked up the ball when the ball was dropped, and we said, well, let's make lemonade out of this. And he did, and he stepped up to the plate, and this is just the way this ball bounces, but we're just getting started. Mostly, I got to thank you, my listeners. You make the show. I just come and give you my thoughts, and it's you that make the show. That's what talk radio really is about. It's about our interaction, and mine's been fun with you all in so many ways. This has been a very interesting incarnation for me because I usually get hit just from the right. Now I can say in equal time I've been hit from the left. So with that, my final love letters version. So we'll start with hate me from the left. Dear Ms. Skinner, add me to the list of people who will be relieved when your final program on KTLK AM 1150 concludes today. I find you utterly self-absorbed and self-promoting. We know too much about your Red Bull addiction, your long blonde hair, your frequent Fox appearances, your major in finance, your high school debating background, your foray into politics. All of this introduced by pulsing, driving, loud theme music, punctuated by constant laughing. Sincerely, with love, Nancy. Nancy, if you know that much about me, then that means I'm doing my job. That's called good radio. Dear Nancy, I figured out why you weren't worried about the swine flu. You figured you were protected by all your hogwash. Love ya, Charlie. Dear Nancy, you're good at stroking yourself, aren't you, hillbilly? Half your lame show is all you do is talk about you. Randy is back. Adios, dumbass. Love, Fred. Dear Nancy, thank heavens you're leaving the airwaves. Please, don't come back. While I sympathize with your narcissism, I can't bear to listen to you. Suzanne. You got a break, Suzanne. You won't have to. All right. Now, we'll end on a better note than that. Still Olivia Newton-John. This is good. Dear Nancy, this used to be from the right, but I'll get those AFRAM on O'Reilly tonight. The timing's off. You will be sorely missed. Admittedly, I saw you as a right-wing tool at first, but now I realize it's only because you were the replacement. Now I will miss your non-combative, non-abrasive, open-minded approach. You are more thoughtful than most. I bet you convert more right-wingers with your knowledge and approach than anybody else who shares the airwaves. And if anyone can catch all of the fallout from the right wing and bring them around to our way of thinking, it's because of your style. Please come back soon. Raquel. Let's see. Dear Nancy. Wow. So sad to see you go. You will be missed in Los Angeles as well. Your show is great and so are you. I stayed home from work today to listen to the whole show. Usually it's bits and pieces. You're pleasant to listen to and you cover the pertinent topics. I will miss you too. Is pirate radio legal yet? Uh-oh. You're blowing my music, Cree. Okay. Nancy, I'll miss you because even hearing your theme song cheers me up. Your personality is so upbeat, it helps me get through the day. I guess I'll have to buy Pink CD so I can muddle through it till you get back on the air. Maybe Fox will give you your own show. Good luck. Keep up the good work because you have made a tremendous impact more than you know. Thanks, Bobby. That's for you. And I'll ask you one thing, to go to Nancy Skinner Live, sign up to keep in touch with me. And I have one more request while I'm gone. I need you to keep causing trouble.